It's astonishing to me how many passages we can draw in the New Testament. We just were in just a couple of verses there. I mean, that was what? One, two, three. Three verses so far. And look how much New Testament text is hanging on these three verses. Okay. Now we move into the main chapter. You realize that the chapter breaks are artificial in biblical text. So if it was up to me, I wouldn't put a break between Isaiah 52:15 and 53:1. It's the same oracle, it's just continuing. You know, that's not how it reads, but that's how it should read. So it should keep going. We were just talking about how kings are going to be astonished. What they had not been told them, they'll see. What they had not heard, they will understand. And then it keeps going. Who has believed our message? To whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Ramban explains, when the report of the Messiah comes among the people, who is there among them that will believe it? So once again, Ramban is of the opinion that this is speaking about the Jewish people not believing the Messiah when he's revealed. Here's how Paul says it. Paul says, they did not all heed the good news. For Isaiah says, Lord, who has believed our report? So faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the word of Messiah. Okay, so same interpretation as Ramban. Here's how John uses the verse. He says, though he had performed many signs before them, they were not believing him in him. This was to fulfill the word of Isaiah the prophet, which he spoke, Lord, who has believed our report, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Verse 2, for he grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of parched ground. Rabbi Yechiel Lichtenstein has an interesting interpretation on this verse. He says, the parched ground refers to the house of David, in that the house of David was it's not a noble house. Rather, there's all sorts of skeletons in the closet of the house of David. It's descended from Ruth, the Moabitess. There's the story of Judah and Tamar. There's the story of Ruth was kind of a scandal, and there's the story of David and Bathsheba, and you know all these scandals associated with the house of David. That's an interesting interpretation. When I read it, actually, it was when I was reading Rabbi Lichtenstein's interpretation that I came up with my own idea, because I'm not good at reading rabbinic Hebrew, and so my mind has to fill in the missing information as I'm reading, right? So, you know, when you're only getting one out of every three words, you can sometimes have to fill in too much information. You get the wrong idea. So I was reading it, and I thought he was talking about the virgin birth. I thought that's where he was taking it. I thought, well, that's an excellent, what an interesting interpretation. He grew up before him like a tender shoot, like a root out of parched ground. I thought, speaking of the virgin birth, well, that's not what he was talking about. But since then, I found this. This is from Genesis Rabbah, an interpretation from the Midrash Rabbah. However, don't look for it in the Midrash Rabbah, because it's not there anymore. This is from an old version of the Midrash Rabbah that's been edited since then. So, you know, if we had the Midrash Rabbah back in the Middle Ages, this is from what's called Genesis Rabbah of Rabbi Moshe HaDarshan. So, it's no longer in extant copies of Midrash Rabbah. And you'll see why. What does it mean? Parched ground. The Redeemer, whom I shall raise up from among you, will have no father. As it is written in Zechariah 6:12, behold the man whose name is the branch, for he shall branch out from his place. And likewise, Isaiah says in Isaiah 53:2, he grew up before him like a tender shoot. Says Rabbi Berechiah, the Holy One said to Israel, you have spoken before me, saying, we have become orphans, fatherless. Lamentations 5:3. The Redeemer whom I shall raise up out of your midst will have no father also, as it is said, Behold, the man whose name is the branch, for he shall branch out from his place. And likewise, Isaiah says, He grew up before him like a tender shoot. So you can see why this would have been cut from the Midrash Rabbah, because it seems to imply, it seems to hint at the story of the conception of Yeshua, the virgin conception of Yeshua. I thought it was an incredible coincidence that my misreading of Lichtenstein's commentary actually had textual support from a no longer extant version of the Midrash Rabbah. I mean, how great is that? Anyway, it says in verse 2, He has no stately form or majesty that we should look upon him, no appearance that we should be attracted to him. What does this mean? Ramban explains. He has no army. He has no people. Instead, he comes meek, riding on a donkey, like the first Redeemer Moses, our master, when he entered Egypt, with his wife and his children on a donkey. Here's how I read it in Philippians. He emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, being found in the appearance as a man. He humbled himself. So there's nothing that you look at him and say, Whoa, there's King Messiah. Check it out. There he is. Look at the crown. Look at the robe. Look at the war horse. Look at the standards and the banners and the army behind him. Instead, it says he was despised and forsaken of men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, like one from whom men hide their face. He was despised, and we did not esteem him. So I'm just going to rattle these off from the New Testament. He came to his own, and those who were his own did not receive him, John 1:11. He is the stone the builders rejected. The Son of Man must suffer many things, he said, and be rejected, Luke 9:22. He was rejected by the religious authorities of his day and rejected by his generation, as he said in Luke 17:25. He must suffer many things and be rejected by this generation. So the key word there is rejected. Passage says he will be rejected, he will be despised, forsaken. We didn't esteem him. It's ironic, you know, because it's like the Jewish argument that Yeshua does not qualify for a Messiah to be the Messiah qualifies him. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's irony. That's like divine irony. If everybody said, oh, it's the Messiah, then he's not qualified to be the Messiah. All right. Verse 4. Surely our griefs he himself bore and our sorrows he carried. Yet we considered We ourselves esteemed him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. Here's how Ramban explains it. It says, He was pained for the iniquities of Israel. And this is which occasion his tearing. This is why it takes so long for Messiah to get here. Because they hold him back from becoming king over his people, the iniquities of Israel. And known to sickness, he was a man of sickness, because a man who is sick is continually distressed with pain. So that refers to the pain that he feels over the delay of the redemption, that and the sins of Israel, the exile, causes the Messiah pain. And this is what it's referring to. In the words, yet he carried our sicknesses. This means that he himself is sick and distressed for the transgressions which should have caused sickness and distress in us. So the sicknesses that Israel should have had, he took upon himself, bearing the pains which we ought to have experienced. This is Ramban's explanation of what the verse means. Again, not a believer. I just feel like I need to continue to point that out. Ramban, not a New Testament reader, not a believer.
Did he just make a lot of people mad?
Well, you know, I think he did.
What did he do? doing?
Ramban is he's a character that in that he doesn't hesitate when the Midrash is like off on like some tangent. Ramban doesn't hesitate to say that's just garbage. that's just the sages, you know. Whereas Rashi tried to incorporate everything and say, no, that's literally what it means. You know, whereas Ramban was he enjoyed pulling the rug out.
What era was he from?
He's contemporary with Rashi, actually, or maybe a generation later. So he'd be like, you know, probably the 1100s or something like that.